Cool. Hello.
Hello. I got a cold, so don't shake my hand. If you've already shaken my hand, you have a cold. So don't shake that person's hand. I'm going somewhere right now between my Barry White lower range and my Peter Brady. I'm sick right now. It's going very nicely for me. Cool. Gosh, I have no sense that the people here want to get started in open source. There's way more people here than it is appropriate for a talk called Getting Started in Open Source. I assume that you are the HoloLens overflow. Right? Can't go to Mars. Hanselman's got Muppet videos, so maybe there's an Xbox involved somehow. Maybe we're going to get free stuff. I have no barcode reader, I have no free stuff, and I have no HoloLens. And I've never actually seen one. Has anyone seen the HoloLens yet? Is it awesome? Do we need to get one immediately? Do I need to sell my house and buy one right now? It's that good? Will you ever leave? Is it like Snow Crash? Do you just want to like rent a storage unit and just walk around the storage unit in like virtual reality the rest of your life? Pretty much? Pretty much. Okay, that's what we heard. So yes, leave your spouses immediately and buy a HoloLens. That's the word that this gentleman said right here. All right, cool. So I was told to talk about getting started in open source. And there's a couple of different ways that one can cover that kind of stuff. That's my car, by the way. I saw some people milling around. I needed to lock it because I don't trust you all. And I wanted to talk about how to get started in open source. And the thing I want to talk about, though, is that to get started in open source, one has to be in the community. And I think we forget sometimes about what it really means to get involved. Now, fortunately, you are all at Build, which I don't think you realize. Just being at a software development conference, from my perspective, puts you in the top 1% of software developers because you left the house, right? I mean, you're out there, right? Now, some people don't like the characterization that I made on my blog a number of years ago, where I said there's a thing called dark matter programmers. Do you guys remember what that is? It's not meant to pick on anyone. It is a concept, speaking of Mars, right? What is dark matter? It's the space between the stars, right? It's all that space that takes up the rest of the universe. You know, when we think about the universe, we don't think that there's as much vast and empty space as there is. But there is. And we can't actually prove that dark matter exists. So I can't prove that dark matter developers exist. But I'm proposing that for every one of us, there are 10, 20, 100, 1,000 developers that didn't have the money to come to Build, didn't have the access, didn't hit refresh fast enough. Right? Lived in the wrong time zone. You know, there's all these different things that prevent people from coming here and sharing with this kind of stuff. But there's also people that don't necessarily know that user groups exist. Like, let's think about that for a second. Did you know that there are developers with 20 years in the biz that have never been to a user group? Like, they know that people meet up and talk about code, but the idea of a monthly .NET get-together or a monthly, you know, Ruby languages get-together and a community is foreign to them. Sometimes we call them 501 developers. And again, another thing that can be twisted where someone says, hey, look, it's 501, can I punch out? And then we think, well, Scott's saying I need to work all night long. I have a family. I don't want to do that. This is not what I'm talking about. We're talking about you go to work, you turn the crank, you make the punch cards, and then you leave and you are unfulfilled. And I have found that when I am most down about software, when I am depressed about software, I have to find some side project that is my passion project. And I know that we have families and kids or kids in our life or spouses or whatever that take up our time, but I really find that if you're doing something at work that you don't enjoy, if you're doing text boxes over data and you've been doing it for 20 years, if you have 20 years experience in software and it's the same year 20 times, and you go, I don't really feel like I'm doing something fun, I would encourage you to start thinking about getting involved in open source because it can energize you. And here's the thing that I think is so exciting about having all of you here to listen to me is that I can tell you some of these kind of inner feelings that I am convinced that we all have. We have the sense that I'm not working hard enough and I got to work late. I'm not staying up on technology. There's too much stuff to know. How does so-and-so do it? You know, whether it be, Rusinovich, you know, he's got like good hair and he's tall and he writes books and I just hate his guts. Or how does Phil Hack keep track of this? Or how does Amy Palamutin know how to do ReactiveJS? And it's overwhelming. So then you stay up all night and you think that you're going to make it through that. And what I have found, he had a phone call. This is his boss at the job he hates. And what I have found, though, is to recharge my batteries is to know what recharges my batteries. Now, there's introverts and there's extroverts, right? Introverts recharge their batteries by going inward. And that's okay. That's how they get their energy back. They spend time, they Netflix and chill alone, and they get their energy back. Extroverts go out and they get their energy. So know where you get your energy from. Maybe you do text boxes over data, but maybe you want to make video games for babies. Maybe you want to do this. So I had a baby, so then I made Baby Smash. Because the baby kept breaking the laptop, I'm like, well, maybe you could just break it and I could learn WPF at the same time. So then I made Baby Smash. This is like literally a weekend. You can go and see the article about this. It doesn't do anything interesting. Right? You push buttons and it says the name of the letter. And then the characters dance and twist around and stuff like that. So what? We all have side projects. But I made it open source. And then someone made a Silverlight version. And then someone put it in the iPhone App Store and didn't pay me a cent, which totally sucks. But someone turned it into Greek. Someone made a Swedish version, you know? Now, that doesn't mean that you put some code out on the internet and it automatically turns into magic. This hasn't made me any money. It hasn't done anything but make me smile. But I got connected to a group of people and paired with them in a way that I never would have before. I learned things I never would have before. I didn't know how to do click once deployment. But someone I knew had a baby, then knew how to do click once. I could have done one of two things. I could have said, hey, would you go and do click once deployment for Baby Smash for me? That would be one way. And then it would happen. I would delegate that. But what I said was, is one of these days when your baby's asleep on your lap, would you Skype me and let me watch you do click once deployment for Baby Smash for me? And I did. So I've been doing these kind of virtual pairing sessions. And it's just Skype and you share your screen. You know, you don't even have to turn your camera on. And we go and we do this kind of work. So open source doesn't necessarily mean that you go and put something out on the net and you become this famous MVP, RD, Microsoft, blah, 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 with thousands of stars and you're on Hacker News. There's four or five people that have worked on Baby Smash with me. And for every four or five of them, there have been dozens that have sent us videos of their babies messing with it. So when we added multi-monitor support for your more advanced babies, see, they're pair programming on Baby Smash right now. Look how intent they are. I have destroyed six separate laptops because it turns out that the hard drive is under the keyboard. Did not know that about laptops. If a baby smashes it hard enough, they will eventually take out the laptop. So I've got pages and pages of videos of babies doing Baby Smash. I mean, come on.
Baby Smash.
Future text boxes over data worker who's going to hate their job and hopefully do some cool stuff in open source. So I want people to level set about what they think open source is going to look like. Okay, so that's the first thing. I get emails all the time from people who said, I worked my butt off alone, and I made this amazing thing, and I put it out there, and no one cares. And the problem with that is that they attach their worth to the caring of the people that they put it out there for. And then they'll email me, and it just heartbreaks me, because they're like, if you would just tweet about my project, maybe 5 or 10 people will star it, but that's not going to build a community around it. So the goal is not to go into this wanting to build a community, right? The community is smaller than that. It's not about thousands of stars and Hacker News and fame. It's about you and your four or five friends, your tribe of people at your job, or maybe like-minded people at other jobs, or your neighbor who's a coder who works for somewhere else. getting together and hacking out the church website or the kids' Little League calendar and doing that kind of work, okay? I'm going to share a couple of things with you that can hopefully get you started. First, there's a video that I made called Get Involved in Tech. You go to getinvolvedintech.com. Has anyone watched this video at all? Anyone seen this? Brilliant. Two, three people. This is great. So I did this with Rob Connery. I do a podcast called This Developer's Life. You should listen to This Developer's Life. Unlike any podcast you've ever heard before, it's completely unique. It's not a complete and total ripoff of This American Life in any way. It's a complete ripoff. We did a 2-hour documentary about getting involved in tech. How do you start blogs? How do you get on Twitter? How do you do GitHub? How do you do Stack Overflow? How do you do conferences? Where do you start when you go to a user group? I see so many people go to user groups and sit in the back and I never see them again. What was it they were looking for that they didn't get that we, those people who came to build, those people here who go to user groups could have done? Think about a person you saw at a user group recently that you never saw before. Did you welcome them? Did you go and say, hi, I've never seen you here before, welcome. I know it's a little weird, but it works. There's a reason that people walk around and say, have you heard the news? Because it works. So tell them about your user group. Bring them into the front row. Encourage them to speak. I went to an amazing user group in Seattle recently I'd never been to before, and it was their planning meeting in January. It's called CLang, Seattle Lang. And rather than getting a bunch of famous speakers, you know what they did? They said, here's 12 languages we want to learn as a group. Here's 12 languages we're in a group. Who here wants to take those languages? They're not saying who here is an expert in those languages. They said, who wants to learn it and give a talk and tell us what it's about? How amazing is that for a user group idea? They went and they said, hey, you know, you think R is cool. You watched a YouTube video once on the language called R. Would you learn that and just have a 15-minute thing ready for April? That's low pressure. Give a little talk to a friendly group about a language. So they pick all these obscure languages, and they have a computer language of the month. The idea there is that they're actually picking their speakers from the community, the nearby community, as opposed to deciding that they're going to try to fly someone in from out of town. Here's another thing that I've been doing lately that's worked out really well. Virtual user groups. I'll Skype in. I Skyped into a town in Australia. I Skyped into a tiny Greek island that had a user group. You know, I'm sorry, I'm not going to fly there for 45 minutes to give a talk, but I will totally stay up late on a Saturday and give a talk. That was exciting. You can do those as well, and you can get them involved in your open source as well. Now, another thing I want to show you about is I'm doing a thing called March is for Makers. Who is following this here? Because it's the month of March still, and I teamed up with Code Newbies to do this thing called March is for Makers. Anyone do that at all? One, two, three. Check this out. Have you ever thought about doing Arduino or Raspberry Pi? That's a whole world of open source that we don't get involved in. Remember that person we talked about a moment ago who does text boxes over data? It's surprising that that person thinks that doing open source that does text boxes over data is going to make them feel better. Right? They're not really digging their job. Why would they want to do an open source project that works on that stuff? I think the people who have the most fun in open source is they do it on trivial things. You do WinForms by day, Arduino by night, right? Web forms in the daytime, Raspberry Pi hacking at night, art, robots, whatever. I know squat about hardware. I don't know anything about hardware. I know how to use a millimeter. It's a multimeter. See, that's how much I know about hardware. So I teamed up with my friend at Code Newbies. If you have a friend or a family member who wants to get involved in code, check out codenewbies.org. And what we did is for the entire month of March, we made podcasts, we made videos. Here's a great video that we did where I got a Raspberry Pi. I don't know who that dude is. We got a Raspberry Pi in the mail. So my friend Saran and I, she lives in New York, got on the phone and said, all right, let's unbox this Raspberry Pi. Okay, so we get the Raspberry Pi, and we're literally taking it out of the box and saying, okay, here's what it is, here's the parts and stuff like that. And we went through the setup process. I didn't know what I was doing. We had a little multi-camera thing with a couple of webcams, but she's walking me through what to do and how to set this thing up. We're Googling for stuff with Bing to learn how to get involved in that thing. And then I want to show you this part here, because this is what's so significant about doing stuff in open source. We're sitting here, and we figured we wanted to unbox the Raspberry Pi and make the light blink. And we don't know if it's going to work. We've never made it work before. I want to point out we pulled it out of the box. But the thing that's significant is that, I never said I knew anything about Raspberry Pi, right? I'm not an expert. If you present yourself as not an expert, it is freeing. And I would encourage you, if you're getting involved in open source, to think about that. It's okay to be a first timer. In a minute here, we light it up, and she freaks out. We got the, yay, we're lighting it up, we made it work. So we put together a couple of other things for people to think about. There's a place called firsttimersonly.com. And what we're doing is we're encouraging open source projects. Who here has an open source project? You have and you actively run an open source project. Tag some of your issues on your open source project as first timers. That says, this issue, I will hold your hand. And you will have your first PR, your first pull request. Be sure to check out Twitter at your first PR. Look at what this, hey, what's up? Look at this here. Look how she felt. Felt welcomed and wondered what else I was able to do. These are all people who had great experiences in open source. Here's where things go bad. I don't remember what it was, but it was hostile. I didn't know the rules, and he never did open source again. Remember that person we talked about a minute ago who goes to the users group, you see them once, and they never show up again? Anything that we can do to make people feel welcome. Now, this doesn't mean if you run a giant popular Linux-based, if you run Linux, you don't have to be sweet and nice to everyone. But if they have an issue marked first timers, walk them through that. Think about what a small effort that is. Pick the top 10 issues, make 3 or 4 easy, and make it the barrier to entry small, and think about what someone's going to feel like when they go and make their first pull request. So you mark your items as first-timers only friendly. Another place you can go is upforgrabs.net, up-for-grabs.net. And that is a website that keeps track of all the different things that are going on in open source and all the different projects that have open issues where you want to get involved. And you can go and filter. And you can say, I'm an F-sharp programmer. I'm a C-sharp programmer. I want to do SQL. That's what I have to offer. If you still don't feel like you can do that, I want to remind you that not only is the documentation for ASP.NET itself open source and written in Markdown, but also the documentation for Azure is all in GitHub. So you can go and check a spelling error, improve some grammar, write a unit test, check that in, and you are now contributing to open source. Here's something to think about, though. And by the way, this is a really good reason to have a blog, so you can go and you can Google yourself later. I wrote a blog post about that GitHub activity graph. They've got this green graph at the bottom of everyone's name that makes you feel like crap. That's mine. You know, whoops. That was classy. Current streak, 0 days. That's like seeing, number of days since our last workplace accident. 0. And then you say, well, am I doing okay? I did 235 contributions this year. And then you look at Damian Edwards. He's double. Then I look at Monica Dinkulescu, 3,200. So she's destroyed me with a long streak of 20 days. David Fowler. And then I realize, why am I comparing myself to these people? Why am I making my career in open source comparative? I did 235 contributions last year. That's pretty freaking cool. I'm not going to compare myself to someone that's got 3,000. I can't run an Olympic 100-meter dash. I can't beat Usain Bolt, but I can jog to the mailbox and be winded. Nothing wrong with that. It's an accomplishment, right? So what I'm trying to encourage you all to do is think about, what are you measuring yourselves against? And remember that if you measure yourself against everybody else, you're going to fail. So worry about your own self and worry about the things that you're excited about. I would encourage you to do open source in languages you're not familiar with and identify projects that are first-timer friendly. You can talk to the contributors on Twitter first. You don't want to roll in with a PR right off the bat, right? If I leave this meeting and I come back and one of you has done a Git clone on Baby Smash and run ReSharper and then send it back to me, I appreciate the work. I do, and I will be very sweet to you. But that, we didn't talk about that first, did we? But if you emailed me and said, I want to make a Chinese version of Baby Smash, would you like me to fork it or would you like to make it integrated? Let's have that conversation. That would be super excited. Does that make sense? We got a couple of minutes for questions, and I appreciate you all actually staying here. That's pretty amazing. Thank you very much. There's a couple of questions. Anybody? I'll repeat the questions because there are no microphones or way to answer. There's no way for you to ask questions. You just have to yell. Are you just sitting because it's comfortable and you're waiting for the Mars thing to open up? Yes. How much time do I spend doing stuff like this outside? I would probably say maybe 8 hours a week. So an hour here, 2 or 3 hours, you know, kids are asleep, wife is asleep, an hour here, hour there. I think 8 hours a week is an amount that is a lot, but it's not crushing. All that time I would have spent doing, you know, Ironman triathlon type stuff. You know, it comes out of my workout time. Yes. That's a brilliant idea. This gentleman here says, what about user groups inside the company? So useful. That's actually how I got started. We called them brown bag lunches. If you're thinking about doing speaking, you got to speak to 5 people before you speak to 50. Having an internal user group is great. But even more, check about this. What about a cross-company, non-competition-based user group? You're an insurance company, and they work in healthcare or finance, and they have nothing to do with each other. Why don't you get you all together and you can alternate between companies and talk about your tech? You can avoid signing NDAs by just talking about patterns and CI systems and things like that. Most VPs of engineering are cool like that. But no one ever thinks to say, if I don't like my company's culture, why not bring another cool company in and show them how things work? Maybe they show us how continuous integration works and we show them how the cloud works. Excellent idea. Thank you for that. Yes. Say it again. Am I using copy left? I'm not. Most of my licenses on my GitHub are MIT or just kind of wide open. I'm not too much on the copy left. My blog and stuff like that is Creative Commons. I believe in share and share alike with attribution. But most of my stuff is wide open. I did a pan tilt zoom camera with some code for Logitech, and I thought about doing different licenses, and I had to think about my goal. I wanted people to use the thing. So I made it MIT, and I've had healthcare companies and all sorts of people come and say, thank you for writing this. I didn't make any money on it, but I know that it's my pan-tilt zoom library is in use all over the world. If I had used a GPL or a copyleft-based license, it would be less likely that they would be doing that in large enterprises. Great question. I got I'm 1 minute over, so I'm pretty much done. Was this marginally useful? All right, cool. Thank you all for your time and your patience.